They're making a difference treating structural heart disease. So we're discussing transcatheter therapies. Our guest from Southwest Healthcare Temecula Valley Hospital is Dr. Niraj Park. He's an interventional and structural cardiologist, as well as interventional cardiology fellowship program director. This is the Health in Harmony podcast from Temecula Valley Hospital. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Joey Waller. Hi there, Dr. Park. Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Great to have you with us. We appreciate the time. So first, in a nutshell, what are transcatheter therapies and what patients do they apply specifically to when we talk about structural heart disease?
Transcatheter therapies is a pretty broad term, but when it comes to cardiovascular and structural heart, it applies to patients that have valve diseases that cannot be taken care of through traditional open heart surgery mechanisms.
And so what would some of those conditions be actually?
So there would be conditions such as mitral regurgitation, where the mitral valve leaks backwards into the lungs and patients have symptoms of heart failure and shortness of breath. It's literally where the patients feel like they're drowning with fluid. It's like aortic stenosis, which is a very common disease process where calcium builds up on the valve, the aortic valve. And after some time, the valve is restricted, so it doesn't open well, and it limits the blood flow that the heart can pump to the rest of the body, and thus causing symptoms again of heart failure and angina.
So that being said, a transcatheter aortic valve replacement, also commonly known as TAVR. Simply put, how does that work and for whom is that suitable here?
Yeah, great question. So these are therapies that we offer patients that are not candidates for traditional open heart surgery. Over 12 years ago, the only way to treat these disorders was to open somebody's chest, cracking the chest open, performing a sternotomy, putting them on a heart-lung machine, and replacing the valve. Now, over the last decade or so, patients that are older, frailer, have multiple comorbidities, such as being on dialysis, having COPD, these type of disease processes, having weak hearts, they wouldn't be optimal candidates for an open heart surgery. And for these reasons, and for much more that we found where they have chronic therapies, where they need steroids and so forth, where they wouldn't recover well from an open surgery, we're able to offer replacing the valve just through the femoral artery. And it's gone to the point now where it's completely minimally invasive. You don't even have general anesthesia. It takes about 30 minutes and patients will go home the next morning.
Wow. So how do these transcatheter procedures compare to traditional open heart surgeries in terms of recovery time? And of course, what everyone wants to know, most of all, patient outcomes, right?
Correct. That's a great question as well. So with cardiology, everything is done with large amounts of literature and data to support it. And so thousands and thousands of patients have been studied nationwide and worldwide comparing open surgery to transcatheter therapies. And when this first came out, it was only done on the highest of highest risk patients. So two surgeons would have to deem a patient not a surgical candidate. They would have to be too sick to do anything else. Those are the patients that we initially enrolled. When that trial came out, we found that those patients did well with transcatheter therapy, but again, they were the sickest of sickest patients. Once that trial was successful, we started to do those patients that were very sick. Over the last 10 years, we've now studied patients that were intermediate risk as well as lower risk patients. And even now currently the most recent literature supports even asymptomatic severe aortic stenosis patients. And that literature all supports that the outcomes are comparable to open heart surgery, with actually a lower risk of stroke, lower risk of other complications such as pneumonia. And then the hospital length of stay average is 1 day now compared to 7 to 10 days with open heart surgery.
That's a huge difference indeed. And so when we talk about the end result, what can patients expect?
So the patients can expect to feel, there's two stages that I've seen over the last 10 years. There is some immediate improvement and gratification of patient symptoms. They feel almost instant improvement with the new valve opening. as far as their symptoms of how they can breathe, how they feel the energy, the heart failure symptoms, they're able to offload that volume, extra fluid. And then over the next few months, they continue to feel better because now they're able to actually walk more and do more and rehab. And so we traditionally send patients to cardiac rehab where they actually have focus on getting stronger and recovering from all these months and years of having a valve that wasn't helping them do the things that they normally would be able to do.
And speaking of which, tell us, please, Doc, a little bit more about that in terms of the symptoms and the turnaround here, because these are people that typically have really been very stagnant, immobile, unable to do the quote unquote quality of life things that so many of us enjoy and often take for granted until they're no longer available.
That's right. And so with this therapy, we, like as I mentioned, everything is transcatheter. So everything is through the femoral artery and the femoral vein. We pre-close and pre-stitch everything. So there's no tubes or anything like that left in. Patients have minimum bed rest time, like 4 to 6 hours. But the next morning, physical therapy is already working with them and giving us recommendations as to what their needs are at home. And we set these patients up from the get-go with home physical therapy, and then we transition that to a cardiac rehab program. And so really, we give them like the best jumpstart, restart back to their normal quality of life.
And when you talk about that quality of life, what are a couple of the things that, from your experience, patients typically are most thankful to be able to get back to as a result of this procedure?
First and foremost, they're thankful that they're not in the hospital every other week with heart failure, and they actually can be at home with their family and their friends and their, you know, significant others. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that they're just able to enjoy, as you mentioned, the everyday things of life, walking, golfing, swimming, things that we day-to-day take granted that we are able to do, and they were not able to do for months or even years sometimes if they were underdiagnosed.
When we talk about especially older patients, it seems golf is often one of the activities that's at the top of that list. Let me get back out to golfing and I know I'm good, right?
That's right. Yes, that's right.
That's great to hear. So how about lifestyle changes improving outcomes after undergoing a transcatheter heart procedure? What has to happen once the procedure is over and done with so that whatever positive changes have resulted can stick?
We give some medicines to help the valve stay open and not to let the body have platelets stick to it. So we give them some very simple medicines to help with that. We have very close follow-ups with patients too, and we check their heart, we check their valve the next day in a month. These type of procedures are very closely monitored by registries. And so we have a whole team just to get these patients kind of get ready for their procedure. There's a team of physicians and coordinators and nurse practitioners that are involved in the pre part. And the same team follows these patients in the post and the aftercare and to help really facilitate, because every patient is very different. Some people need more, some people need less. And so these are really tailored treatments and therapy plans for individual patients that based on what their needs are. Some people bounce back right away and they catch it early. Now we're able to catch these patients much earlier. So it's becoming a little bit more of a smoother transition. 5-6 years ago, we were only seeing the sickest of sickest patients. And so it took a little bit of a longer time to get them back to that lifestyle that we were talking about. But the key is educating, doing these type of talks and getting the word out that we can take care of them earlier. Low risk, intermediate risk patients are approved. And so we really want to end asymptomatic as they're approved. So if you hear a murmur, get them to us so we can diagnose them earlier and treat them earlier so they can really get back on the horse much faster.
Switching gears a little bit. How about telling us, please, what mitral valve disease is and what are the latest advancements in transcatheter therapies for that?
So mitral valve disease is a little bit more complicated of a valve disease process, and where you could have mitral regurgitation where the valve leaks backwards. You could have mitral stenosis where calcium builds up and it restricts the flow from one chamber to the other chamber. Or you could have a mixed picture where you can have a little bit of both. If you have purely regurgitation where the valve leaks backwards, we have something called transcatheter edge-to-edge repair. It's what the surgeons used to do. They used to do an Alfieri stitch where they would repair the valve with a stitch. We're able to replicate that stitch with a transcatheter edge-to-edge repair. And that repair, also known as a mitral clip in some common terms, will basically do the same functional job as a stitch would do. And it would cinch the spot where the maximal leak is creating two orifices instead of one orifice, and therefore now eliminating that regurgitation. So that's been around for several years now, and it's been shown to reduce heart failure admissions, shown to improve quality of life outcomes, as well as we do these questionnaires of how much they can walk, how their symptoms are, and what the difference they've seen since the procedure. Overall, they seem to do much better from a quality of life, reducing hospitalizations, as well as their questionnaire of how they feel we've changed their life. In addition to that, we've studied, as far as outcomes, we've studied these therapies, these transcatheter edge-to-edge. We call them TEER, kind of like we call that TAVR. So this is called TEER therapies for mitral regurgitation. And you have to really treat 8 patients to get 1 improvement in their mortality or outcome. Where some of the medicines and defibrillators, you have to really treat like 30, 40, 50 patients before you get an improvement. So it's really a powerful impact of their mortality and their outcomes. The newest stuff coming out now is for this mixed picture and the mitral stenosis. That stuff has still been in trials and literature, but now we just have some valves coming out this year and the next year to actually help with this mixed picture. And so there'll be new valves that are being implanted transcatheter, going through the septum from the right side to the left side and actually putting a new valve inside the old mitral valve. So that's the latest and greatest that's going to be pretty much approved later this year.
Couple of other things, Doc. What risks or complications are associated with transcatheter therapies, and how do you manage those?
Sure. So they sort of depend on which therapy we're talking about. So for transcatheter aortic valve replacement, or TAVR, the risk is because we have a large bore axis in the artery, like a large tube that we put into the artery to help facilitate the valve to kind of go through that tube, the risk are of bleeding complications at the entry point in the femoral artery. So those can range from 1 to 2%. You can get a hematoma, you can get a bleed where you have to put a stent in, or in, you know, worst case scenario, you need a vascular surgeon to repair the artery if it really gets injured. That's not common. The more common thing, which is not really a complication, it's, I would call it more of like a side effect of getting a transcatheter valve in the aortic valve position, is when we put a valve in, we're basically expanding a valve on a pre-existing calcified aortic valve. So we're pushing against the conduction system. So some patients can require a permanent pacemaker after. The national average is about 7 to 8%. Our program is about 3% of patients needing transcatheter valve replacement needing a pacemaker. Outside of that, you know, it's really any type of risk of stroke, which is similar to doing an angiogram, similar to doing open heart surgery, that ranges in the 0.1 to 0.3%. And that's really because we have large catheters and valves going across the aorta to the heart. So if there's calcium, and these patients are in 70s, 80s, 90s, have a lot of calcium buildup in their aorta. And so there's, you know, a risk of that happening as well.
When we talk about minimally invasive surgery these days, it seems in all areas of medicine, one of the main advantages is the greater precision that you and yours can work with. Why is that so important here when we talked about the effectiveness of these heart valve replacements?
What we've learned over, you know, medicine is ever changing and ever evolving. What we've learned is we know how to plan these procedures to the T. You know, plus or minus a few things, we do a lot of prep work. This involves the heart team approach. You know, many people may have heard of it, but this is not just, you know, Dr. Parag saying this is what we're going to do and this is how we're going to do it. This is an interventional cardiologist, a structural heart cardiologist such as myself, as well as one or two heart surgeons. We have cardiac anesthesiologists. We have cardiovascular nurse practitioners, as well as cardiovascular coordinators, all working together to work this patient up, do their planning. They get angiograms, they get CAT scans. So the day of the procedure, it's precisely timed. We know which access to do. We know which valve size is going to go in. We know any pitfalls along the way. And our job is to get in, be in there for 30 minutes to 40 minutes, and get out. That's how we can get this precision. This is all planning. It's all imaging. Imaging has changed cardiology and interventional cardiology drastically to the point where we know, we see the valves, we know where to look out for. We know where the exact point of leak is because we image these patients that have mitral regurgitation prior with transesophageal echocardiograms. So we know what size repair we're going to, repair click we're going to place. We know where we're going to put it. We know how many the patient will need. So it's a very planned procedure. Probably the most planned procedure in cardiology.
Finally, doctor, in summary here, what future developments in this transcatheter therapy world should patients and healthcare providers as well be aware of, do you think?
I think that there's still a lot of work to be done and a lot of work that's continuing to be done because we have just touched tip of the iceberg here. As I mentioned, we have mitral stenosis and the mixed mitral valve diseases that is coming out soon. We just have started doing tricuspid valve therapy, so a different valve that leaks that is really challenging to treat with medicines. It's a right-sided valve. And when that leaks, it's hard to really balance the water pill and effect on the kidneys and effect on the heart. And so when we really tapped out our resources, we didn't really have many options. And surgeons weren't taking patients to the OR for one valve, especially the right-sided valve. So now we have actually ways to repair that valve as well as replace that valve. We have other pathologies in the valve where the valve leaks, like the aortic valve can leak. We don't have a great answer for that, that's being studied currently. We also have other transcatheter therapies like that help patients that have weak hearts that will help support their heart just through transcatheter mechanism so they can actually walk around. They're not hooked up to a machine in the intensive care unit. They're able to like walk around the floors, potentially even go home at some point. So there's a lot of things to look forward to with interventional cardiology in the near future.
Well, folks, we trust you're now more familiar with transcatheter therapies. Dr. Parikh, keep up all your great work. It all sounds very exciting, including what's headed down the road in the future. And we thank you so much again.
Thank you.
For more information, please visit tvheart.com. If you found this podcast helpful, please do share it on your social media. And thanks so much again for being part of the Health and Harmony podcast from Southwest Healthcare Temecula Valley Hospital. Physicians are independent practitioners who are not employees or agents of Temecula Valley Hospital. The hospital shall not be liable for actions or treatments provided by physicians.